You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
You're listening to the Celtics Late Night Show. Live at www.CelticsLateNightShow.com. Now, the hosts of tonight's show, Nick Gelso and B. Paul.
Come on, Celtics!
A little blast from the past there. Welcome to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. My name is John Duke. I've got Jack Michael, the infamous Jack Michael, along for the ride tonight as we talk about some Celtics, some Pacers, some Kyrie Irving, some shenanigans with the refereeing as what we see here. And look, it's Celtics now have the tiebreaker. After all the kvetching and kvelling and all the other K words, this one K word, Kyrie Irving, was the difference here tonight as the Celtics pull out a 114-112 win. Again, the Celtics postgame show is brought to you by betonline.ag. We're very excited to have betonline.ag as the participating sponsor with us here tonight on the Celtics postgame show. But first up, I want to talk to Jack. Jack. This was an important game. It's probably not the end-all, be-all game, but what was your takeaway from this very, I think, very crucial win here over the Indiana Pacers?
I mean, it definitely shows that the Celtics are still going to get up for games that they perceive as important, you know, and you know, quote-unquote big games against other Eastern Conference contenders. And like you said, John, it gave the Celtics the tiebreaker against Indiana, you know, potential tiebreak, which at least gives us home court in the first round, which would be, you know, the ideal situation, especially against the Pacers, who are so good at home and not so much on the road. But also I saw it as kind of just a tough kind of grinded out win where both teams went on runs. But, you know, this, every time Indiana went on a run, the Celtics were able to respond. You know, there were stretches where, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic, it seemed like he couldn't miss a shot, where Miles Turner couldn't miss a shot, where even Thaddeus Young couldn't miss a shot. And every time that happened, the Celtics were able to kind of calm down and come back and hit back. So I was, you know, it was just a great game, you know, end all be all. It was just a great game.
Do you think, and we'll get into all the details, and certainly 20 points in the second half by Kyrie, a lot of, certainly the key basket there on that drive with 10.5 seconds left. And really, I think as good of a show of what Kyrie Irving can do in terms of getting to the basket and, you know, using his handle and having Jason Tatum in the corner is the potential way to really end the game right there. That was like the perfect Kyrie movement. He had had a couple instances where he, you know, the shots weren't going down, but to me that was why you have Kyrie Irving and why, yeah, you know, the idea of this team not needing Kyrie Irving is just so silly.
Yeah, the types of shots that Kyrie can take and make just forces defenses to account for so many more looks than having a guy like Terry Rozier. And, you know, as much as I love Terry Rozier, he's not going to be able to take, let alone make, the shots that Kyrie Irving is going to make, especially in a situation like that. And just one more quick thing on that shot. Obviously, I think we're going to talk about it more, but I really liked Brad bringing the ball in from the backcourt. I think that was an interesting wrinkle, especially having Al bring it up, you know, because I kind of thought the Pacers just kind of looked disjointed from the start. They looked like they didn't know where they were. And it ultimately led to the shot, yeah, which, you know, as much as we've kind of said bad things about Brad recently, I thought that was a nice little thing.
And I'm definitely not a fan of the Brad slander, but I do expect at some point I'm going to talk about Marcus Morris here tonight. But But most importantly, let me just read off a couple of things. And by the way, we do want your calls. Toll-free number 347-215-7771. That's the call line to come in, join us on the show, talk to Jack, Michael, and myself. Will someone be a caller? Call the coward tonight? We're gonna maybe. I'm hoping so. I'd like Jack to kind of Jack Michael. Jack Michael 17 is a brand in and of itself, and I'd love to be able to get something started here. As we're starting to get that, we need to get some aggravation, some frustration going with the Indiana Pacers. So I'd love to see if we can get something going. If you have suggestions, please call those in again, 347-215-7771. But I just want to read off a couple things here. To me, maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's something. Minutes played. Okay. Jason Tatum, 23 minutes. Gordon Hayward, 22 minutes. Marcus Morris, 20 minutes. Jaylen Brown, 27 minutes. Now, on the plus side of and Terry Rozier, 15 minutes. Do you think that is a sign of where the minute distribution is to come for this team? Decidedly, with Aaron Baines getting 32 minutes tonight, it seems like Brad Stevens is making a point where we got to carve out more minutes for that double big lineup of Horford and Baines. And unfortunately, that means some of your wing depth is going to pay the price. Do you think that's an acceptable trade-off for the Celtics? Or is that maybe just situation dependent against the Indiana team with Miles Turner and Sabonis?
I'll qualify my answer to this question by saying if Gordon Hayward plays kind of the way that he did play tonight, then I am fine with it, where he is kind of in that role of he was aggressive, he was bringing the ball up, he was initiating offense. You know, we've seen him do it before, and hopefully it'll continue. But that's my one qualification. But I'm fine with the lineups tonight. I actually really thought there were some lineups that he put out that I didn't really recognize, but I liked them. And if Baines is good to go, you know, with the ankle and with everything that's been going on with him, then I don't see any reason why, you know, at least for the rest of the regular season, the Celtics can't run out this 9-man lineup. I would have liked to see, and I've kind of been calling for it a little bit, Jaylen play a couple more minutes. I just think he's been far and away better than Marcus Morris over the last couple weeks, probably even months at this point. But I think, you know, Terry playing 15 minutes, if Gordon Hayward's going to play like he did tonight, is an acceptable trade-off. And also not playing Daniel Tice or Rob Williams. I don't even know if Rob Williams was available tonight, but I sacrificing some of the wing depth, especially when you have Semi Ojeleye, you know, seemingly always ready to go. He's always in the gym. I think I can make that trade off.
The Ojeleye factory is while it's quiet, it's not lying dormant, and
never
let's hope that never closes. There is there's always overtime, and it is a union shop, in case you're curious, folks. in honor of the Celtics Twitter, there's no way that union is there isn't a shop steward making sure that everyone's getting their 15-minute coffee break, and that's just the way that is. I'm glad you brought up Marcus Morris. 20 minutes for Marcus Morris tonight. A team leading minus 16.
Team leading.
I don't know if that's really the way to put it, but yeah, team leading minus 16. The bench had some big struggles tonight. And Morris, as you said, if this turns into a rip on Marcus Morris, you know, I feel bad for the Flask dad, but it's coming. He's had it coming. Family court is calling, and Flask dad is in trouble. He has not. He's been the team, and we talked. Justin and I have talked about this a lot on Celtics Stuff Live.
Yep.
And since January 1, obviously he has been the worst player by net rating on this team. 20 minutes is the first time. This is one of the first games I've seen where I thought decidedly his minutes are really maybe coming back to earth. And I'm glad to see that. But can they be cut back more, I guess? And I guess the question goes back to what other alternative do they have if they're trying to play Baines and Horford together? You need to have that rebounding. I mean, can you look at a guy like Gordon Hayward, who had 6 rebounds tonight, twice as many as Marcus Morris had, oh, by the way. Jason Tatum had 5 rebounds early on, not really none in the second half. Do you think it's capable of Gordon Hayward and Tatum to fill that void here in the playoffs? Do you think a switch will be thrown off in the rebounding department so that way they can make up for really what I think the only benefit that Marcus Morris is providing to this team, which is on the rebounding side of things?
Yeah, I think theoretically that, you know, that was the idea from the start, that, you know, Gordon Hayward would kind of just suck up most of the Morris minutes and basically, you know, take that role in the lineup, but just be Gordon Hayward at it instead of being Marcus Morris, meaning he'll be an initiator and he'll be a guy that can take his, you know, take more threes, take more shots at a higher volume. So I think, you know, theoretically, that's supposed to be what kind of happens. And I think, you know, as we've seen Gordon get more aggressive over the last couple of weeks, over the course of the last couple of months even, he's kind of stepped up the rebounding a lot. You know, it just seems like he looks like more of an athlete out there. He looks like he's not afraid anymore. And I think that corner, you know, if you could say he turned a corner, I think that's, you know, if that's the flip that got switched, or the switch that got flipped, or whatever it is.
Flip that switch around.
then I think, yeah, you can dial Marcus Morris's minutes back a little bit. And, you know, as much as I like him and as much as, you know, he essentially kept the Celtics team afloat in 2018, you know, I think, like you said, it's time.
Yeah. And again, we are still taking your calls, but give you the number again, 347-215-7771. That's the number to talk to us. I agree. Like, I think due respect should be given to what Mook was doing early on. He was shooting at a very high percentage. You could live with his desire to not move the ball as much, because he was making those shots. You could say, no, yes, right? I mean, that was the first 2 months of the season, first 2.5 months of the season. Now,
yeah,
it's not just that, but it's affecting his defense, I think. And that's the thing to me. I mean, if he's just rebounding in defense, I might be able to live with some of the ISO ball. But I can't live with the fact of, you know, a lot of his defensive assignments, he's screwing up, you know, and unfortunately for him, the eyes are on him because of the whole thing going on in Miami with him and Jalen. And, you know, he's looked at as, you know, well, he's doing the right thing and the young kids aren't. Well, clearly the numbers don't bear that out in over a pretty long stretch now, almost 3 months. So I agree with you. I think if you can get a lot of the same production, maybe 90% of the rebounding with Morris, then, and you could go with a 2-big lineup or at least more of Aaron Baines, I think that's all you can ask for. 13 points, 13 rebounds from Baines tonight, 60% from the field. That's if you can get that every night, that's great. If you can get that against, you know, Indiana in particular, I think that's a really good sign. What do you think defensively? How do you think the two teams matched up defensively? Did you feel like there were things there left to exploit? Did you feel like that perhaps, maybe we didn't see as much Bogdanovich? I thought I was expecting even more from Bogdanovich than the 27 points, 4-for-7 from three. I almost thought it felt like he could have had 40. You know, he had a good first half. What do you think about in terms of how the matchup looks between these two teams?
I mean, defensively for the Celtics, I don't remember off the top of my head where they stand league-wide defensively. I know Indiana, I think, is top three, if not number one. But I don't remember where the Celtics stand. But over the past couple of weeks, obviously with Baines out, it's been rough to kind of get a gauge for where they were at. But I think tonight they did show that they can kind of, you know, lock up and get a stop when they really need to. I think Marcus Smart kind of made a more concerted effort, it seemed like, in the second half to kind of fight through those screens when he was guarding Bogdanovich. You know, he didn't get switched onto Kyrie Irving as much. He didn't get, you know, and then even with the bigs too, they didn't get, you know, Thad Young onto Kyrie Irving as much. Obviously they did at the end of the game and Thad Young missed the layup, but It seemed like, you know, kind of just fighting through those screens made a world of difference for the Celtics tonight. And, you know, in a 7-game series, I do trust Brad to kind of figure out what the Pacers are going to do, especially. These options that are in theory good, like Bogdanovich and even Thaddeus Young and Miles Turner and Sabonis, but I think that they can kind of be exploited a little more than they were tonight. Like, I think they kind of, you know, this was probably Sabonis' worst game against the Celtics. It seems like he's the guy that always killed us. And tonight they really did a good job of not only reining him in on offense, but also forcing him to get into foul trouble as well. So I was happy with the defensive effort tonight, especially after some of the games we've had recently.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, in comparison to where we've been recently, this was like winning the NBA Finals. So there is that. Pacers end up with, as I'm counting here, 6 guys in double figures tonight. So outside of Bogdanovich, they did move the ball pretty well. Thad Young with 18 and 9, Miles Turner with 50 and 11, only 4 points for Wesley Matthews, but he, at the same point, he led the team in plus minus with a plus 9. So only 5 shots from Wes Matthews too. So that's an interesting piece. He's been a very key piece for Indiana as they've kind of made this, I don't know if I'd say it a run because they have played badly, but he's really somewhat helped them stabilize who they are and what they're doing. So that's a kind of an interesting piece. One more thing maybe before we go to the line and go to break here, but Bogdanovich, you know, at different times they had Jaylen on him. I saw Tatum on him a little bit. What's the Celtics' best chance at him? Do you go small? Do you get underneath him? Do you take a bigger defender, force him to put the ball on the floor? What do you think is really the Brad's best option right now in trying to throw something at him?
I mean, the obvious answer is Marcus Smart, right? I mean, with a catch. Like, the obvious answer is Marcus Smart. He's the best at fighting through the screens. He's the best at staying into guys. He's the best at contesting. He's the Celtics' best all-around defender, I would say, right now, today. But then you watch today's game, and in the first half, he was getting beaten a lot just because Bogdanovich was able to shoot right over him. So that's where you throw the height into it. So I think a guy like Jaylen Brown would probably be the best against a guy like Bogdanovich on a guard. And Jaylen has shown that he's capable of guarding guys that are going to be running around screens. He guards Klay Thompson a lot. He occasionally guards J.J. Redick. So I think Jaylen just for the height, because I saw Bogdanovich just shoot right over Marcus Smart a couple times tonight and hit it, and it made me a little scared. So as much as I love Marcus, and as much as, you know, it's like picking between two good things. But Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown, if I had to give a definitive answer.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jack. I think that's we've seen this happen a lot where Marcus, you know, if you're trying to earn position, he's very tough to deal with, but when you can rise up and shoot over the top, people seem to be able to find a way around that, whether you want to go back to DeRozan and when he was in Toronto, or you want to talk about, you know, Kawhi, when they can get over the top of him, that seems to be where he just doesn't have that same level of effectiveness. Now, he still can make ridiculous plays, and I'm not saying he's a net loss in that series, but I think you're right. I think size is important, and finding somebody who can maybe take him out of it would be important. I mean, frankly, I don't know that Gordon Hayward might not be a bad option in terms of he has enough size, and Bogdanovich is not exactly the speediest of guys out there, so he can get to the bucket, no doubt, but I think the Celtics do have options, but they got to stay close, and they certainly got to contest, because while I think Miles Turner and certainly Wes Matthews can do some things, Bogdanovich is really the only guy that's going to be able to consistently put up more than 20, I think, on that team.
Oh, sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead, Jack. Yeah.
Yeah, like he's kind of like that X factor kind of guy. Like, even when he was on the Wizards a couple seasons ago, he was putting up decent numbers against the Celtics, and that was, when he was the third option or the fourth option even. So it was, he's always kind of been that guy that, for some reason the Celtics struggle against, and, they're just going to have to find a way to stop it. At this point, he'll probably be, if not the second, maybe the first offensive option for the Pacers in a potential playoff series. So, like you said, depending on how Wes Matthews does, and, I'm confident in finding ways to stop him when he's, a higher offensive option than third or fourth.
Absolutely. All right, I think that's a good point for us to maybe take a break. So we'll be back to you after this. Again, start calling in, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your dogs and cats. Call us, 347-215-7771. Talk to the Celtics post-game show here on CLNS Media, brought to you by betonline.ag. So hang around for a second. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% cash back on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% cash back on your first deposit.
When it's time to make a hire for your small business, of course you want to find the best person for that job. Well, the odds are that person is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to get matched with quality candidates who make the most sense for your role. People come to LinkedIn every day to learn and advance their careers, so LinkedIn understands what they're interested in and what they're looking for, which means when you use LinkedIn Jobs to hire someone, your matches are based on so much more than a resume. LinkedIn goes further. They include skills and background, interests, activities, and passions. This way, you'll get the most relevant and qualified candidate early on in the process, and you can spend more time on candidates you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in developing quality hires. So listen up. Post a job today at linkedin.com/garden and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/garden. Terms and conditions apply.
Fun. Okay, well, we are back, and we are ready to kind of jump in here. Again, Celtics postgame show here on CLNS Media. We've got, again, the Celtics won tonight, the game 114-112, thanks to a very, very last-second shot by Kyrie Irving with 0.5 left. Nice little drive to the hoop, doing some Euro. It was so pretty, so pretty. The type of play why you have Kyrie Irving on this team. Let's go to the phone lines. How about from the 740 area code? Welcome to the CLNS postgame show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey.
This is Miley from Ohio.
Miley, so tell us, what you think about tonight's game, man?
Well, we seem to play like a team again, like we have been for the last few games, and we put up an incredible stretch, and then we started losing the lead, which made me a little concerned, but then Kyrie just was coming up clutch and helped us in the critical moments of the game, and I thought toward the end we played pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about this Pacers team? Does tonight give you optimism in terms of where the Celtics are headed into a playoff series with these guys and possibly having does home court matter? Does having a better chance at that, does that matter? Or do you think that the Celtics are far enough ahead where that's not a concern?
I actually think they're far enough ahead where it won't matter regardless. I think it'll still be like a close series, but I have the Celtics. If they play the Pacers, I have the Celtics going and winning it at least in game 5 or game 6. So I think they're headed in the right direction. They seem like they're having the late momentum carry on them to the rest of the season and get ready for playoffs.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Jack, any thoughts?
Yeah,
the big Mo.
Yeah, I've been encouraged. I've been encouraged, by this game specifically, and obviously coming off of a pretty bad losing streak against, some teams that you would have liked the Celtics to get, quote unquote, up against. but this, you know, this one was a good game just because it was kind of that tough, grinded out game against another good team that, you know, it feels like we haven't seen the Celtics win in, you know, a long time. So, you know, like you said, that's just the most encouraging sign for me from this game.
Also, how far do you guys think we'll go in the playoffs, or are you not really certain yet?
Well, okay. So to me, that it's a complicated question, right? It's which Celtics team is there, right? Is it the team on paper or the team that we've seen with our eyes for the last, you know, 6 months? And yeah, that's a harder question to answer. But my own sense is that this team is going to be a lot different when it's a 7-game series and it's the first to four. I just feel like there's going to be a different level of urgency, a different level of focus, an urgency not only from the players but also from the coach, which I think will infect the players as well in a good way. And I think that the Celtics could use that. They could use a sense of urgency at this point to say, look, it matters now. The time to look ahead to is over. The here and now is where our focus should be. And so to me, that's if that team shows up, that's a team that can Pacers, but they can beat the Bucks. They can beat obviously the Sixers. I'll wait to get your thoughts on that, Jack Michael, because obviously we need to know what Liberty Ballers thinks, but I want to know, whether or not, and I think they can beat the Raptors. I think they can get to the NBA Finals. There's nothing about that. So that's my feeling, Jack. I mean, again, do you want to start with the Liberty Ballers' take on this, or do you want to just look from the Celtics' perspective?
I mean, I really agree with everything you said, John. I do believe that once the playoffs come around, this team is going to kind of just have that sense of urgency, have a sense of like, all right, these games matter. You know, any kind of little petty locker room issues that may or may not be true, or any sort of chemistry issues on the court, they're going to kind of tighten up, you know, when the games do start to matter. You know, not saying that these games don't matter for seeding purposes or just for win-loss purposes, but you know, once the stakes are raised, I do think that the team will perform better. And, you know, to speak on the 76ers, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that the Sixers cannot trot out a lineup that scares me in any way from a Celtics perspective. And I know that sounds a little cocky. I know it sounds, you know, whatever it may sound, but it's the truth. Like, even their, you know, Simmons, Butler, Harris, Mike Scott, Embiid lineups, or whatever lineup they tried out with, even replace Mike Scott with JJ. Right? There's nothing they put out that I know the Celtics can't counter and win against, because we've seen it. We've seen it multiple times with every iteration of their team that they've had in the last 365 days. And, you know, that's until they prove it wrong, that's the mindset that I'm going in with. As far as Toronto, Milwaukee go, they're definitely going to be a lot tougher than they would have been probably last year or the year before and in previous years. But I do still think that like we said, once the stakes are raised, this team is going to perform.
And one thing I would add to that, and it's a postseason conversation, but when you look at Milwaukee and you look at Toronto, those are teams really that are built for one season. So
yeah,
look, it's a one season right now, right? I mean, everything is about from here to June. You shouldn't worry about that. But when you take a step back from where we are, and I want to hear what your thoughts on this, Miley, too, is that, look, you've got, yes, the Celtics have had a disappointing season. Yes, it's frustrating. I've made the case over and over again. This is a finite period of time that this frustration exists, and then something will be different next year regardless. And I think it will be a healthier season from that perspective. But when you look at Milwaukee, there's a lot of guys on one-year deals going on right now in Milwaukee. When you look at Toronto, their biggest guy is on a one-year deal. So even if things go great for them and they get to the conference finals and all that, this may be it for them. You know, this is their top end. I don't feel like this is the Celtics have even begun to scratch the surface. And that's a problem in and of itself. Like, oh, we've got all this time. We're young. You know, you don't want to have that perspective. You want to have the, we've got to do it now, because you really don't know what tomorrow can bring. Certainly the KG Celtics are evidence of the fact that you can't expect, you know, to win tomorrow when, you know, you've got a chance today. But I look at this team and I say, it's frustrating, but I do know there is a tomorrow. There may be some key pieces not here next year, but there is a tomorrow. I'm not sure there's a tomorrow in Toronto. Less so in Milwaukee, because you still have Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that's its own issue. But what are your thoughts, Miley, on not just where they fit, but also the future of what this core can do against those cores?
Well, I think once this core, once they play more games than what they have this season together, I think that they're going to just start, I know Tatum, he's going to start turning into more of a superstar than what he is already. And the rest of the guys, they seem like they're starting to get the hang of playing together, and they're feeding off of each other's momentum. And that's just going to keep getting better going forward, I think. And then they're just going to be tough to stop.
Yep, absolutely. I hear you. All right, well, hey, Miley, I appreciate the phone call. Really really good stuff. Thanks for joining us here tonight.
No problem. We
love having you.
All right,
good stuff. Go Celtics. There you go. Thanks, Miley.
All right,
good to have Miley here on here from the great state of Ohio. We're glad to have him with us. There's this guy, and I'm not talking about Nick Gelso. I called up. I'm going through the call lines here, and I don't know everybody's number. And I see a 941. I'm like, hey, the Celtics stuff. I'm like, Celtics stuff live. No. I said, CLNS Media, hey, it's John. He says, hey, it's Nick. I'm like, Nick? It's Nick. Oh, it's Nick. You cannot do a Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media without Nick Sesento on it. This is what it is. Nick, my man, how you doing, brother?
Fantastic. I'm loving the talk about the future and the talk about tomorrow and the talk about, you know, the peak and the sunshine in store for the future of the Boston Celtics. I just had thinking about something for you.
Just thinking about tomorrow. There's a way they cobwebs and the
I was listening to this John Duke monologue with the bright sunshiny day, and I was like, this sounds like a song lyric. I didn't even know who it was. Now I know it's Annie, so I just learned a little bit of culture as I YouTube that for you. Anyways,
thank you.
Two quick points for you guys. The first one, a positive one, one that I think that people on some of the hosts on CLNS have talked about, I think, a little bit. I don't know where everybody stands on it, but I really like the insertion of Aaron Baines into the starting lineup, not just because I think it's addition by subtraction at this point with Marcus Morris, who clearly has regressed to the mean of whatever it was that Marcus Morris was. That's what he is. Again, he's not the same guy that he was earlier in the season, but also because Aaron Baines, I did a show earlier this week, and I ran across some stats. It must have came from, you know, crazy Celtics Twitter or some, or maybe it was Celtics Instagram, which is, I think, a step beneath crazy Celtics Twitter, or weird Celtics Twitter, whatever you call it, a step beneath on the intellectual scale. You get a lot of, like, children on there. But as with children, as they typically do, they love statistics more than anything else, and they love these obscure statistics. The more obscure, the better. And there was a statistical meme passing around with Aaron Baines on there, saying that Aaron Baines, when he plays 15 minutes or more, it has a record of, and this is, you know, a couple of games ago, but, you know, according to a couple of games ago, 15-2. The Celtics are 15-2, and Aaron Baines plays 15 or more minutes. And when he plays 14 or fewer, or as colloquially you'd say, 14 or less, The Celtics were 22-21. So clear differential, not just that, but the defensive rating without Aaron Baines, I think, went from something that was as absolutely atrocious as like 106, 107 points down to, I think, 97 or 98 defensive efficiency or defensive rating with Aaron Baines. So he's absolutely somebody that you need in that lineup, along with the Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart can't be the only, you know, real defensive guy, and I know Al Horford is defensive as well, but when you put them both in there, they cover up a lot of the mistakes. You can't have four gunners and only one guy that's looking to pass, which is Marcus Smart. So I like that addition. And the other thing was Kyrie Irving, but before I run on, I'll present, you know, my first point to you and take a breath.
And this episode are sponsored to us by BetOnline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win. Use the promo code CLNS50 for 50% cash back on that first deposit. So go to BetOnline. It's sponsored by BetOnline.ag, clnsmedia.com/win. So that breath, it got you all the way through that little tag, that little plug. It's all good stuff. Yeah, I love the addition. It's like an addition. I like the addition of Baines, but and I advocated start of the year. Justin and I on Celtics Stuff Live. If you haven't followed, you need to follow. It's, you know, we go way, way, way back to the dinosaur days of the Celtics. We were talking
about the OGs.
The OGs, yes. We were talking about games back when Heinsohn and Havlicek were playing. No, not really. We're not that old. But
John Duke was podcasting back then. Havlicek stole the ball, and then they you know, they replayed it on iTunes and Stitcher.
Exactly. iTunes and Stitcher. Whatever the 1963 version of iTunes and Stitcher were, we were on it. I love the addition of Aaron Baines into the starting lineup. I think it allows Horford to get that rest he needs. It allows that the team's defense and rebounding to solidify. It allows the Celtics to come out and kind of smack a team in the mouth and then go small with more of their second unit and then, you know, kind of build from there. This Celtics team needs to build from the defensive end forward. It needs to reestablish itself as a defensive team first that can score. And that has been lost through this season. So I like that. But and we talked about this a little bit at the front. To me, the bigger part is addition by subtraction of Mook Morris from the starting lineup. That to me is almost the bigger thing. And I know it's almost like questioning Brad Stevens, but I'm here for that. At least on that score, I don't understand the Mook Morris stuff over the last 2 months. But Jack, is there anything I'm missing there? What do you think?
We touched on it before, but with how good he was early in the season, I think it's just in a locker room full of NBA players, it's just so hard to kind of justify taking a guy out that was, you know, that was essentially keeping the team afloat. You know, as much as we on the outside can kind of look at it and say, like, look, he's been playing bad, take him out. It might be harder for them. It might be harder for them on the inside to go through with it and actually take him out and actually, you know, reduce his role, stuff, you know, anything that we've been calling for. So I think it's just, you know, a role question more than anything, because he had that, you know, enhanced role, and it's hard for them to take it away, and it's also hard for him to give it up. You know, it's not like he's going to be like, yeah, I'll take less shots so these guys that haven't been playing well most of the season can take all the shots, you know? So we'll see where it goes from here, but tonight was a good sign.
Yep. All right, Nick, you've got you've got something else for us here, so I'm ready, man. I'm ready for it.
I saved the somewhat hotter take for afterwards. I noticed the show began, and of course, you know, with, you know, completely justifiably, a lot of praise for Kyrie Irving. I mean, he did hit that wonderful shot, which I think was as much like a brain fart on the part of the Indiana Pacers, who just apparently were going to open the Red Seas, you know, part the Red Seas for Kyrie Irving to come right through with one of his patented jelly roll layups. But to me, I think this narrative of this game, and this game, I said it on the post game. I don't know, must have been the last game. I don't even remember who they played, but it must have been the last game. They won, so it was all right. The Cleveland Cavaliers, that's why I didn't remember, because they're irrelevant. But I said to Rory that this was, Matt Rory, that this was a must-win game. And I think if you look at the schedule for both teams heading forward, while their opponents, I think, are probably about equal, I mean, they're the toughest opponent for either team, both Indiana and Boston, are each other. Boston heads to Indiana in about a week or so, I think, to play the last game of their season, which is going to be another must-win game. But if you look at Indiana's schedule coming up, Orlando at home, Detroit at home, at Detroit, and Boston at home, Brooklyn, and then at Atlanta, and then the Celtics at Brooklyn, Miami, at Miami, at Indiana, Orlando, at Washington. So they both close out the seasons with, you know, trashy opponents, Atlanta, Washington. Both have games against Orlando. That's about, you know, whatever it is. Detroit and Miami, both equivalent. Both have games against Brooklyn. So it's about the same down the stretch, except the Indiana Pacers play four of those games of their last six at home and only two on the road. The Boston Celtics play the opposite, four on the road and two at home. So it's critical, and I said it before, that the Boston Celtics take care of the Indiana Pacers. Don't give the Indiana Pacers any type of momentum, any type of confidence coming into this. And the Boston Celtics, you know, if they're going to go ahead and beat the 76ers in the round after that, or the Milwaukee Bucks, or whoever it is, the Toronto Raptors, they're going to need at least one easy pass or one easier pass. And I think drawing the Oladipo-less Pacers, and the thing that I noticed about the Pacers more than anything else tonight was they just didn't come out with any urgency. If they come out flat in the playoffs and the Boston Celtics can finally learn how to keep their foot on the gas, they'll sweep this team or go five, you know, winning five games, especially with the home court advantage coming out at TD Garden to start out the series. But the thing that I didn't like about this game, this is what I'm getting to, I'm sorry about the long monologue, is Kyrie Irving, within 5 minutes, it seemed like play after play after play of Kyrie Irving dribbling the ball up, getting double-teamed and trapped, trying to make his way through it and putting up a shot. And a lot of those shots didn't go in. And those shots that didn't go in ended up as Indiana possessions while Indiana was shooting, you know, lights out. And that's how that lead that the Boston Celtics had accumulated there in the fourth quarter, that's how that lead got eroded in the first place. So while I love the fact that Kyrie Irving was able to take advantage of a complete miscue, Turner, completely not being in the paint where he needed to be to block out the Kyrie Irving drive, and the other defenders who were trapping just completely just spreading wide open and Kyrie getting in there, I think there were a lot of plays 5 minutes in, 3 minutes in, where it was like just ISO play after ISO play after ISO play, Kyrie hero ball, hero ball, hero ball. I don't know, it seemed like he was trying. I said in the previous post game, you know, speaking of the Charlotte game with Kemba Walker, like kind of like a duel. But who is he dueling with? Darren Collison? I mean, come on, Kyrie. At some point, and I'll end it here. At some point, the Boston Celtics have to run their offense in the clutch. It can't just be Kyrie, 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 Kyrie. Every single possession is going to get obvious in the playoffs, and it's going to get difficult to execute. Thanks for taking my call.
No, it's good stuff. Hang tight on the line there. We may come back to you, but I've got somebody on the line right now that also is a Nick, also goes by the name Nick, and I suspect has some very spicy feelings about Kyrie Irving in the clutch there, just judging by the Twitter back and forth. The founder of CLNS Media, yeah. Mr. Nick Gelso. Nick, you got me, you got Jack Michael, owner of Liberty Ballers. I need to know, what is the thought process right now, man? You were at the Garden tonight. What did you see? What's your feelings on tonight's game?
All right, let me start with I have to get my coach tonight. So
hold on. Would you have to go, all right, now I'm nervous. But okay, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I didn't go tonight. So anyway, I watched the whole game. And first things first, I feel like we just picked up back 3 years ago when I would host with Nick and I would never get a word in edgewise. That was an epic rant. Did he breathe? Right? I mean, he didn't stop.
I think he's got oxygen hooked up right now.
My God, it was great. But anyway, I mean, it's more, I think, not. I'm not going to pick on Kyrie. He was amazing tonight. But
okay.
It's more the whole team. It's just, here's what I come away with it. And I'm not pissed off or I'm not mad or anything. But this is kind of proof that they need home court and that they need to play. This series is not going to be shorter than six games. I mean, you have to go down to the wire. I think I called it a Hail Mary, and I got beat up on Twitter for calling that Kyrie shot at the end a Hail Mary. But I still don't know how many people couldn't dice up three defenders in how many seconds on the clock and still get the ball in with 5/10 of a second left. So it took all that to beat the Pacers on your own court. The Pacers can't win on the road. They struggle on the road. And yet they nearly beat the Celtics on their home court. I think it's just super important that they need to not have load management bullshit leading up. I mean, unless it's Al Horford or Baines, everybody better play in the damn games leading up to next Friday because they need to win these games and they need to beat Indiana on Friday, today, and then you could rest people. Get that fourth seed locked up. Because I think the longer – if they could get through – they go six games with Indiana. They win in six, even on their court. That gives you enough time to really start gelling. And it is a whole new season in the playoffs. So, you know, hopefully they'll take that opportunity to gel. And but I would rest Al Horford where I could and Baines because you could see how good those two are on the court together. Anyway, now I'm getting like, Nick, I need to stop and take a breath. Like, did I put you guys to sleep?
Oh my God. Hello? Hey.
Oh my,
hey.
God. My God, guys. You know, what the hell happened? I hear crickets. Like, what happened? Well, am I talking to myself?
No, you know what it is we are in awe of the founder.
A trance.
This is like, you know, when, you know, what's the guy who runs Scientology? When he speaks, it's like everyone stops.
Oh, good
so you
God!
You got Tom Cruise.
That's not
I'm
a good
Tom
comparison.
Cruise. I'll be Travolta, and you can be Tom Cruise, Jack Michael, and we'll kind of do that.
Oh, my
whatever
God.
You say, man, we're in awe.
Oh my God! This is coming from the guy who like taught me how to do this. Like, are you kidding me? I didn't know what a podcast was. I was, like, in Pennsylvania starving for Celtics content and because you couldn't get it. They didn't have – I don't even think if they had League Pass then, John, right? So,
I
Google it. No, you'd be able to listen to Grandy and Max on NBA.com, but it would buffer forever.
Yes.
So you'd, yes. Like, Google Celtics after the game. You go to Celtics blog, and there you have Duke and Poole and talking Celtics. It was like heaven.
Gosh.
So you're really the founder because it wouldn't have happened if you guys weren't crazy enough to do what you did.
Crazy.
You
got that right.
I
don't know about anything else, but
yeah.
We're having a lot of fun. I mean, I never owned a blog of an opposing team like Jack Michael does, but I'm going to keep mentioning that
stature.
Just so you know. I don't have that. I don't have that kind of pull, but. No, you know, I think
the amount of back padding has been incredible at this in this booth here.
I love
like,
it. I love it.
You're stoking it, man.
It is. Well, that's good. Hey, listen,
I can see the bad reviews pouring in. I love it.
Yeah, good, good. Keep them rolling, baby.
I love it.
Bet on betonline.ag.
Yeah, exactly. CLNS 50, baby.
That's right. CLNS 50.
I troll our own videos on YouTube because I look for comments bashing me. I really do. Like, I can't tell you how many times – this isn't, like, something to be proud of either. I love the guy. I think you like him, too. But I can't tell you how many times people have said, like, what are you, Tangway?
Oh,
on my on our videos. And I'm like, dude, I don't get it. But I don't think what I'm saying is so outlandish.
No. But it's, you know, I think – the problem is like it's the lowest common denominator. You are not getting the smart replies on the YouTube comments, right? I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's gutter. It's like local newspaper comment section.
It's like Jerry Springer Forum or something. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, it is low, but it's great. And you know what? They come back constantly. And to be honest, there are a lot of educated people, but people just play down to their lowest, I guess, the lowest common denominator. They feel like they could be whoever, typewriter gangsters, for some reason on YouTube. For sure. They throw crap all day long.
Typewriter
gangsters.
Well,
you see it now.
Oh, yeah.
You're exposed to it now because your show does
exactly.
really well on YouTube. Although, what happened this week? Like, nobody wanted to talk about Isaiah Thomas. It was weird. Usually that would blow it up. And none of the Isaiah Thomas videos really...
I'll tell you
what happened.
Getting their teeth
like
kicked in by the Spurs happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Losing that game to the Hornets.
Yeah,
like,
you're exactly right. It took all the air out of the room.
If they had
won two and one
last week, we would have spent the whole show talking about Isaiah and how much
awesome
he is.
Especially the dude spent a lot of time in the Celtics locker room. Like, I'm not joking. He was in there more than he was in the Nuggets locker room. There was a point where him and Allen and Kyrie and Hayward were in the private room together for quite a while alone. It was just really, I'm telling you, like I could see, and then Kyrie's comments were actually really gracious about him. I could see a comeback there. And it's a great topic. But anyway, what do you think about this game tonight? Do you think that it was convincing? I mean, it's a great game. It was really fun to watch. But was it convincing you? Like, do you walk away going, yeah, we got this locked up. These guys, we could take them in five.
No. I don't think I walked away with convincing. I think what I'd say is I like the direction that the rotations and the game plan of facing the team. You know, and I think
there seems to be a game plan, right?
Yeah, there's a game plan. It's like, okay, I like where we're headed. And as I said to Nick, the biggest thing, and Jack Michael and I, we talked about this a lot early. Like Mook Morris. Like, his 20 minutes is like, yes, please. You know, if there's a one in front of his minutes played, I'd be even happier. I'm done with it. I'm so over the Mook Morris thing.
It's a shame too, because he was such a huge contributor early on. But it is a shame, and he's the type that'll wither away at the bench because he'll sulk about it. I think.
But it became a crutch.
I'm not gonna, because overall I like him, but I think. You feel what?
I think it became a crutch for Brad, though. I think it was like, well, he'll do these things. And the problem was that he wasn't doing the things they needed him to do. And it was having a really negative impact elsewhere. And when you see guys like Jalen step up and play better, and admittedly, he's not like consistent all the time. I'm not saying he is, but like the difference between where Jalen was in November and October and where he is right now is night and day. And I would rather have the peaks and valleys of a third-year pro who has all-star potential than Flask that. That's it, you know? I don't need that right now. You let him come in off the bench, get some ISO jumpers in 15 to 20 minutes a game, play some tough deep, maybe throw him on the right matchup defensively in spots. But like, keep him isolated in that small role, and I think he can thrive in that. But I also think he's held back. I'd like to hear what Jack thinks about this. I think he's held back the rest of. I think he's held back his emergence and his role has held back guys like Hayward and Tatum and Brown because they haven't had the room to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't know. To me, that's a problem. But what do you think, Jack? I mean, has Mook taken care of what those guys can do?
Wait a minute. Duke, it was like I was texting Jack going, don't talk. Give him crickets, because that's what you did to me after my big like soliloquy 5 minutes ago. Like,
savage.
Duke, I mean, really was a flashback to 2007 because I just went from the edge of the cliff to, we could beat these guys in five. Like, you just, like, talk to me. No, I'm kidding. Anyway,
call me up, Brad. I'm ready. Put me in coach.
Yeah. Put him in coach.
Sorry, John. What was the question one more time with Mook?
Well, I was just saying Mook. You guys. No, Mook's taking up the space. Come on, guys. Damn it. I believe we're going to have to like Kyrie. Come on now.
Kyrie, he's fired up tonight, man. I'm trying to get him to call in. He's fired up.
He's tirade.
Tirade. That's a great one. That is definitely amazing. I'm definitely going to use that starting the minute I hang up this call.
Please do.
On Twitter,
all
he's getting
to
called
me, but
tirade. I will. Oh, yeah, I'll courtesy you. Hat tip you. Don't worry.
There you go. Okay, thanks.
Don't worry.
Thank you.
I give credit.
I know
credit.
You do. You're good
poor
at
Jack
it. Absolutely.
Can't get a word in. Poor Jack can't get a word in.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll answer if you want me to, though.
We do. Like, absolutely.
Yeah,
please.
Yes.
Jump in, man.
It's kind of what I said before with Mook. It's hard when he was playing so well to kind of not only for him to accept that role off the bench, but also, you know, for the people in the locker room to be like, why is this guy on the bench when he was playing so well? Like, they know what he's capable of. And I do think this is one of the disconnects between like what we have as outsiders and what they have as insiders. Like, they're around the guy every day. They see the effect that it's going to have on him every day, where we're going to be like, or the effect that it's going to have on him and the locker room every day, where we're just kind of, you know, not as connected as they are. I mean, I still I still love the guy. And I think, as you pointed out, John, like, just have him come in, take a couple ISO jumpers. You know, I think he should get back to trying to get more catch and shoot threes as opposed to some of the dribble pull-ups. But I'm not going to, you know, if he's doing it in 15 to 20 minutes, I'm not going to complain as much.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that's right. And there is a role for him. I just, the question is, how much will he check out, right? And like you were saying,
yeah,
Nick, like, are we going to lose him entirely, or will he just, you know, or is he like, is this the perfect time where he knows what the stakes are and he can accept that role, and then everything kind of filters in, you know, from that? I mean, I don't know. I you talk to these guys in the locker room, Nick. We, you know, they wouldn't let me anywhere near it anymore, but
I mean,
what do you think?
The Morris thing, I definitely, the thoughts crossed my mind about him stunting Gordon Hayward for sure. I don't think the kid's too much. I think
really,
I think if anything, no. And he's been a good soldier this year. And comparing to last year, he was pretty. At the first part of the season, he was pretty disgruntled having to come off the bench. So this year he's been, and he's also, don't forget, he's kind of, I don't know whether you're on the side of it, him being a divider with his comments or kind of like pushing the team to get their act in order. I don't know which side of it you stand on, but either way, he's been vocal. He's just sucked as of late. So you need to go with the players that are playing best. And I don't think he's one of them. I think I'm glad to see that Stevens has made an adjustment because, you know, there's been concerns there with some of the decision making on his end. So to see him make a hard decision like that and they're still winning games, well, that's good. Tatum has been up and down. It's been an odd year for I don't know how you say odd's the second year, but it's been a weird year for him. He's been hard to describe, and I think lately, like, they need him just to be way more aggressive. I mean, that's the difference tonight between a Kyrie, you know, clutch game winner and, you know, a 6-point or 10-point win is Tatum scoring more than, what did he have, 11 points or 12 points?
11.
I mean, yeah, I mean, dude, like, right, John? I mean, Tatum needs to be at least at 18 points a game. And in the playoffs, he's got to be at 20.
You know, it's funny.
Unless
Hayward's
going to miraculously
feel like that.
Turn back into Hayward.
I feel like – you're right. I feel like that. But, like, then, you know, you see situations – so, right, we know what he did the other night there in Cleveland, right, where he, you know,
what
was
happened
electric.
Okay, here's the thing, Duke. Duke, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I fell asleep during halftime, the old man over here. So I saw the first half and I'm thinking, this kid's, I know, I'm thinking this guy's going to score 40 points tonight. Yeah. And I wake up at 1 a.m. and it's a repeat of the game, or not a repeat of the game, repeat of the Boston Sports Tonight on NBC. And they're talking, mm-hmm. they're dogging on him. I'm like, what the hell happened? So what exactly did happen?
The ball didn't find him, you know, and
so he didn't take shots. He gets lost.
He didn't, but he never, the ball was never really in a position. I don't think they called much for him, and I don't think that the ball found him.
Which is, yeah, going there.
You know what I mean? And that's,
yep.
Like, that's a Stevens thing.
But he also
thing.
Wasn't demanding it. That is a Stevens thing.
Well, right.
But also the difference between a two-year player, or yeah, two-year player,
yeah,
and a four-year All-Star, five-year All-Star, right?
But it's,
he's
it's a tough balance. But okay, so like, but then look at, and I agree with you. But like, see, that's like this. That's the weird thing here, right? Is that like, you want Tatum to assert himself. You want Tatum, I mean, I do. I want Tatum to assert himself. I want him to be a 20-point scorer guy, you know, next year. I think that's in him to do that. But at the same time, there are situations where he has taken, you know, rushed shots, shown aggression, but maybe not had the right decision-making in terms of the shots he took. And then, you know, he gets punished for it, or, you know, punished, that sounds a little, you know, childish, but you understand my point. He's, you know, he pays a price for it.
I mean, shot selection has been terrible.
Right. But it feels
it
like they're not calling anything for him either. They're not trying to,
well,
find. And so it's this balance of like, the team has to have this, like, let the ball find you. Let the, you know, the right decision make. If the ball moves, if you move, the ball will find you. And this kind of like, you know, very Buddhist sense of, you know, you know,
it's annoying.
You know, nirvana of I guess it wouldn't be a Buddhist.
Yeah, it's annoying.
My point is, you'd
it's
find
annoying,
his perfection.
John.
You know,
it's annoying
find
because
it.
You know what?
What?
Early in the not early in the season. I mean, I'm sorry for interrupting you. Not even earlier
no,
in the
ahead.
Season, but a couple up until probably a month ago. I was saying the exact same thing about Hayward. I'm like, it isn't even
yeah.
fair what we're doing to this guy. Why
yeah.
isn't Brad calling plays for him? Like,
right.
set him up. And Tatum,
right.
and I've said that in the past about Al too, because when Al's not in playoff Al mode, now he has been, he's been great all season, but in past years when he's not in playoff mode, he get lost in the offense. And it really hurts the team when Al Horford doesn't touch the ball. So
yeah.
I've kind of often wondered why such an analytical coach does, you know, calls so few plays for players that seem to need shots. Like Tatum, like I said, it's the difference between a two-year player and a five-year All-Star is right now he's still not going to demand the ball.
Nope.
Stevens has to make sure he gets touches.
Yeah.
And doesn't just
yeah,
suffocate in the
go
offense.
Back to him.
Because he needs
you
to
know,
score
like
18 points
right.
in the playoffs. In the
like
playoffs,
this,
right?
Right, and this is where the playoffs change. You know, the playoffs change. You hunt out mismatches, and that's
yeah,
where this
I
team
like
has really struggled. You know, they struggle to find
yeah.
those situations all through the year, and they hunt for things when they're not there. There's no cohesion because they don't know when to hunt and when to kind of let the free flowing nature
say
of it.
Dude,
it's tough.
I hate to say it, and let's not even go to the Kyrie point, but a lot
right.
of this lays on Brad, dude. It does. It really, really does. All season, from the point of not being able to control the locker room to maybe managing the egos to the lack of recognizing rotational issues, I think, and making changes, he's just been off. And I'm a Brad – I mean, I have really – become a Brad fan as a person and as a coach, but he has not really had a great season. Now, Kyrie's not made it easy on him, but he's not really had a really great season. I think everything you just mentioned is coaching related.
Well, I think, yeah, I think so. I think part of it's player related too, though. I think players not doing the right thing, you know, there's a part of this where they have to just, you know, when they're not part of the shot, you know, or not, they're making a hard cut. They're setting the right screen. You know, they're
doesn't
doing
happen.
The little things so that way those situations pay off. And when you're not doing those things because you're not part of you know, this shot gain set up for Tatum or whoever, like that's infecting the whole locker room. So how do you fix that? Well, then we're just going to play free floating and let the ball find where the, you know, who needs to go to. But
brutal.
Then you're like, okay, well now we're back to where we started from. And it's like,
now
somehow
it's got to
find its way. And I feel like what's going to happen is, and we saw this down the stretch, they went more to Horford and Kyrie pick and roll than we ever saw earlier
in
the year. And I think that's going to be the steady diet.
That is going to be the steady – it's a great way to put it. That is going to be the steady diet, and it's a good one because that – their two-man game – and I don't think you even see enough two-man game like the way they play it in the NBA anymore. Their two-man game, it's effective, man. It's beautiful to watch, and it's effective. So I agree with you 100%. And it's killed the Sixers too.
Absolutely.
In the past. So I think that, you know, in the past it has. You're absolutely right. We're going to see a lot of that, a lot of it. And Kyrie and Al's have good – they have great chemistry. I don't think – you know, the problem is a personality lack of chemistry in personalities, not so much on the court. I think they just allow things going on the outside or poor plays on the court to affect them to a point where they implode. And that's the thing that concerns me too. I'm really doom and gloom. Thank God someone's
not. You really are.
I know.
Holy cow.
I'm just annoyed.
No, but
I have never been so annoyed by a team. I got to tell you, John, not even 2010. This team annoys me. They're not fun to watch.
Yeah.
They're frustrating
there.
To watch.
You're
I'm
there now.
I mean,
it's 2010 you're watching on TV like the rest of us. Now you're there. So it's worse, probably.
I'll be honest with you. It is worse. You want to be – I'd rather be listening to Tommy and Mike than – a lot of times in sitting through that. I mean, it has been interesting to listen to the fan reaction. And, of course, everybody knows the story now. I thought Kyrie's comments on that belligerent fan during the Warriors game was really well put. He put it well. But, you know, now you're having the one thing that I think is entertaining because overall as a whole, the Boston TD Garden is a really safe and family-friendly place to be. But those boos during bad games, booing your own team, I mean, there's a portion of you that you hate it, but there's also a portion of you like, I will remember this game. Like, I still remember the game in like 2010 it was against like Memphis where they got booed off the parquet and KG screamed out into the crowd, if you don't effing like what we're doing, don't effing come to the games. Remember this, Duke?
Yes, I do.
And so as you remember when they get booed off the court. So, I mean, that's been, I guess, memorable to be part of often this year. But I have to say, having been up here, steady the last almost 2.5 years, I've missed more games in the last 2 months than I have. It's just been due to business reasons than I have ever. But it's been a mess there. It's not like the normal crowd where, you know, let's go Celtics, try to lift them up. I think the fan base is just as frustrated as we are, as they are too, probably.
There's not a lot to cheer for, and there's – also we've been spoiled a bit too. I mean, that's the other piece of this.
We have
is
been
that
so spoiled.
Between punk rock Celtics and hospital Celtics, like – the never say die attitude of those years compared to what we have now is night and day. And it's unfortunate because look at the Oklahoma City Thunder right now, who are sucking it up worse than the Celtics are. They got 41 wins right now. I mean,
a lot of people were talking
to them about them as a 3 seed and having a real chance to knock off the Warriors, you know, and this Paul George, you know, MVP run. They're doing.
Yeah.
Look at Kyrie's numbers. I mean, I'm not saying
Kyrie's having a perfect season,
like that's a
no.
Like,
Kyrie,
we built
Kyrie,
it up.
Sorry, I'm not going to interrupt you. I just got to interject one thing. Kyrie is having a career. He's having an amazing season.
Yeah.
It's just not translating over to W's every night. But he's playing his ass off every single game. There's been some times where he's taken off, I think, during that period around the trade deadline all-star break. But for the most part, when he's engaged, he's been really good. He's just a pain in the ass. So, anyway, continue your thought.
No, I was just saying, like, that's, you know, we're in it, and it really sucks to be going through it, you know, and we're the victim of maybe too high expectations for what these guys could do.
That's for sure.
But you know, it's like, okay, sure. So we've overshot our where we were, where we could be. Last year, I was very skeptical about what the team could do because I thought a young team, you know, around a veteran core of Hayward, you know, Kyrie and Horford, it wasn't enough. Well, I was a year late on the issues
yeah.
that youth would play, but
yeah,
you know, the talent is still there. And if people will assume those roles and accept those roles, you know, as you know, Jack and I were talking about earlier, all they have to do now that there's a defined limit to their season, let's hope that that's the time when people say, look, it doesn't matter. We just got to win. And that
yep.
that switch, it's not like a playing switch. It's more of a mindset switch in terms of we got to do what it takes to win. The problem is that a lot of these teams have built that cohesion and don't need a switch because they just know how to play
mm-hmm.
together. Games like tonight
mm-hmm.
where Kyrie had to go, 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 and he is a great option
mm-hmm.
and he can get buckets. They don't have that higher level that you can see with like Golden State in their best years or the Spurs with their best years where it was
mm-mm.
the talent. It wasn't just that the talent was good. It was the talent together with their style of play and their effort and their
the
intensity
chemistry.
Made them bigger than they were. And this team is not bigger than it is.
Yep.
It's not greater than the sum of its parts. That's the concern to me.
I agree. No, I'm with you.
Yeah,
Jack, please
so,
say something because I feel like I drowned you right out, Jack. So please talk.
No, I mean I've liked everything that you guys have said. Like I tried to stay as optimistic as possible for throughout the entire season. You know, I tried to be that guy that was like, no, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. You know, even through the roughest stretches, I kind of turned heel a little bit over the last couple of weeks. But you know, I'm still feeling good for the playoffs. So it's like, they've still trapped me. They still got me. And you know, chemistry
well,
issues aside,
I gotta tell
like
you.
I'm still feeling good about it. You know, it's just something in me just feels good about it.
Well, I'm glad you're saying that. I gotta say, like. Truthfully, I've never been a doom and gloom fan. I'm not a cliff jumper. This season, and at the start of the season, I had lower expectations than everybody else. I think like what John was saying too about expectations, I think this team, add to that overconfidence. The team
yeah.
came out of last year thinking they were just going to be able to waltz in to a disjointed training camp with actually preseason games in the middle of training camp.
Mm-hmm.
It was bizarre. Bizarre. Kyrie didn't come in with a great – he's just coming off a friggin' movie tour. I mean, it just mm-hmm. wasn't – it was just – anyway, I was never a doom and gloom guy, and I didn't really flip on it until trade deadline day, until Kyrie revoked his whatever it was, promise to the fans. But I try to remain optimistic, too, and I have to say once – they definitely have a different body language to them. It's not that hideous body language anymore. I think a couple tweaks and I feel like I could reset at the playoffs tip off where I'm not going to go in petrified like a lot of games this year against teams that the Celtics should beat pretty handily.
Yeah.
So I think you got to look at it like a second season, right, John? You have to look at it like,
yeah.
listen, this is really the real season. I hate to sound
right.
like Kyrie, but now they have no choice. This is what they put themselves into.
And right, everyone starts out every series 0-0, right? The problem is that they're going to have to go on the road. Likely, I think they're going to get the 4 seed, but every time after that, they're going to have to go against a really good team and win at least one game on the road, which they haven't been very good at all season long.
No.
But then you still have it like in the back of your mind, like, well, yeah, but they're deeper and probably more talented overall than that team. So it's like they still hold that over us, right? That you know,
yeah.
we all want to be optimistic. They take it away because of their play, but then you're like, well, yeah, but you know, they could. And that's just what they
have
over.
Have you ever
recently?
Seen,
that's been the way it is too. Look at Cleveland. Look at, I mean, all these. There's been a number of teams over the last several years that have gone in not as hot, not as like you know, billowing of smoke and fire as great teams, and they've kind of played the second season completely differently than they played the first. So,
but they had multiple years. Yeah. But they had multiple years, though, John, in
sure.
playing together. Like those Cavs teams. Like when I hear yeah. Kyrie say some of this stuff, like I in my head, I'm thinking as he's saying it, like, dude, that you had. Well, number one, you had LeBron James on your team, but beyond that, you had teammates that you had been playing with for several years. So there was, even if you weren't speaking in the locker room, which I guess there was a lot of.
Yeah.
You know, you were in pretty good. You had good chemistry on the court, you know. And this team does not have that, and they don't have the experience together. And that's what I friggin' fear, you know. And but going into the playoffs again, I think that they'll find themselves. But I don't think they could beat Toronto. I really, if Kawhi's healthy, I think the Raptors. I don't think the Celtics could beat them, and I think the Celtics would lose to the Raptors for sure at this point.
Well,
Milwaukee, to
talk about Toronto, I still have questions about how they're going to handle Gasol and Ibaka. I think that was,
oh my God.
I think that was a mistake. I really do. I think going for Gasol was a mistake. They had the right setup.
Well, it's not. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Ibaka was playing out of his mind. He was playing well, and Gasol, I think that's mm-hmm. that's like introducing Celtics level questions to what they had figured out in terms of rotations and lineups. And you know, yep. Jeremy Lin, I'm sorry, I just have never been a believer that Jeremy Lin can be on a winning team.
Yeah,
I don't.
I mean, really,
you know,
I'm with.
Give
you.
Me more Fred VanVleet if I was a Raptor fan. That's what I would say. Van Vliet scares the hell out
but
of
John,
me.
John, all these things are logical and make sense, but the Celtics right. suck against the Raptors anyway. So even the great Celtics teams, like going back to the Garnett years, they sucked against in Toronto. Like I always was like, oh, Toronto, you know, and that's already against them. They're very good at home with home court advantage. And yeah. I agree with what you're saying. It's logical, but I just – Again, I got to see how they perform in the first round. The first round is going to dictate everything because if they gel and they beat Indiana in five games, you know, there could be a real good vibe. I hate not to use that word vibe, but there mm-hmm. could be a great vibe going into the second round, you know. And the yeah. other thing is, although it's not been Stevens' best year, the playoffs is always his best time of year, and having a look yeah. at a team multiple times and a look before and, multiple looks at these teams, the adjustments he makes usually baffles the other team. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking that Stevens will be Stevens in the playoffs, and hopefully Kyrie is going to support him and never do that, what he did in the media again, say, you know, questioning to the media, the way that Brad is deciding to defend somebody. Because if Kyrie's behind him, everybody else is going to fall in line too.
Yeah.
I know? So I think Brad, you know, Brad's the key, right? In the playoffs,
he
I
is
think,
the
to
key.
A certain extent.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, though, John, the podium is going to be really fun. Like, I hate the press scrum. I hate the media scrums. I hate them. Like, going in the locker room and actually, you know what they're like. It's annoying.
It's awful.
But the,
yeah.
The playoff press conferences are just fantastic, and we live feed them, so it's like everybody can watch while it's going on, just like NBA TV does, which is cool. But I'm looking forward to that, and I'm as negative and Debbie Downer as I was on your show. I totally crashed your show, and as negative as I was, I have no idea what your positivity level was prior to me calling in and destroying it. I'm just thankful you took my call. Because I'm actually sitting here with our lead camera guy. He's off tonight too, so we're watching the game together. And then now we're watching Duke. And
there you go.
Sitting here going, I have to call and speak to someone about this team because I'm watching on Twitter and I hate to sound like Felger, but the Green Teamers are out there celebrating like the Celtics just won the championship. And I'm like, guys.
Wow.
This is not that convincing of a win. You know, I'm getting beat up for it. But you know, Duke, I love getting beat up on Twitter. So it doesn't,
you do.
Doesn't matter.
You live for
to
it.
Me. Go for it. I live for Twitter and YouTube. You know, feel free. you could poke at me all day long. Guys, thanks for letting me crash the show. And, you know, I sincerely apologize for not letting you guys talk at all. And I don't know. The only thing I need now is Mike Munger, the Scotsman, to call in and bash the refs. So,
well, there were some calls,
guys.
But I'll...
they all dropped off. You. They fell asleep. You could. Hey, you should have just told me or dumped me. All right, goodbye.
You got it. Thanks, Nick. Nick Gelso, founder of CLNS Media, and overall, one heck of a fine American. Well, let's as we're kind of wrapping this baby up. Any final thoughts from you as we're kind of heading to the final here?
I mean, you guys covered pretty much everything from here to the end of the season. So, I mean, there's not much I could really add there that would add too much to the conversation. But, you know, I do want to push back against one thing that Nick said, which was, you know, that this wasn't a good win. I do think it was a good win. You know, admittedly, I'm not one of the people that's celebrating like it's the NBA Finals. You know, I'm celebrating it because the team has been struggling and they're playing a good win, and they won a good game. But and you know, a win is a win at the end of the day, and it was a win against a good team. So, but other than that, you know, I'm still, they're bringing me back. They're getting me back to the optimistic side. You know, I had flipped a little bit, but I had the post game for the Warriors game a couple weeks ago, and I think I had it with Bobby, and then I said, I was like, all right, you know, this could be the turning point. This could be a good game. This could be a corner. And they're still making strides, but the eggs that they drop still have to kind of go away, you know, like the last couple games. So.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that they are, I still believe that there's room for optimism, and I agree with you. I think this was a good win. You can't argue it wasn't a good win just because of the fact of it. The Celtics now own the tiebreaker. You know, they've clinched at least a tie for the season series and can win it outright, certainly against Indiana. Right now they have the tiebreaker, so they have the four seed in their grasp right now with, six to play, five to play. So they're in a much more advantageous position right now. But, you know, having said all that, at the end of the day, you know, the Celtics, there's some good, there's some bad. And I think what you take from the good is the game plan and where they're headed with this, I think, is going to only get better. It's a question of cleaning up some things, question of playing with better intensity and better focus. But I think that they're generally in the right way. And I think that they're the question is, can they – I think build that cohesion like we were talking about earlier. You know, can they more than the sum of their parts? And I think Toronto plays like that at times. I think Milwaukee plays like that at times. Can we get to that level? And if we can, then I feel pretty good about where, you know, getting to the finals. If we can't, well, then, you know, second round, you know, conference finals, that's probably our ceiling. You know, and that'd be unfortunate given all the talent on this team, but that just may be the way it breaks down this season. And, you know, that would be a shame. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, we did it. Hour and a half longer post game show than I've probably done in a long time, but that's okay. Jack Michael, good to have you. This was fun. I loved it. I had a great time.
It was a pleasure.
I was looking forward to this. It's not often you get to sit down and chat with an owner of a major blog site for an opposing team. So this is a real thrill for me, certainly. And not only that, obviously, actually, before we go, give us a hint. Is there anything out there you see that we can exploit with the Pacers in terms of anything? I'm not even going to say anything on par with Shoot a Three Coward, but I just, like, is there anything there? Do you see anything there, any cracks that you can exploit?
I don't know. I mean, the Ben Simmons thing was kind of an amalgamation of a season long,
sure,
you know, kind of aggression that we had towards them. But then, you know, the Pacers, like, they have a bunch of players that I really like. So it's like, I don't even know what I could say, like, about them, where it's like,
where it gets to be anything bad, and it's I'll come up with something. Give me until April, and I'll come up with something.
Okay. Look, I don't want to put you on the spot here. You know, look, this is one of the true delights of last spring and last summer, and then him responding was just that feat of inspiration and joy that you provided us with. And so
not to me, of course, not to me.
Well,
just responding in general.
Right, of course. Right.
I'll remain anonymous.
Right, anonymously. But, you know, that was a wonderful thing, and I'm hoping to recapture some of that here in the spring of 2019. So, you know, I look at the Pacers, and I just, like you said, I don't see a lot of that hate and discontent that I was able to generate for the Philadelphia 76ers. I mean, there's so much there. There's so much material to work with, and there's just not nearly as much here with the Pacers. So it's gonna be a real challenge. It's gonna be a real slog. Never mind how many games this season the series goes, but it's gonna be a real slog to work that up. But I believe that when we get against Milwaukee, and you know we have Eric Bledsoe, if we can get to that point, I really believe that there's gonna be a new level of inspiration that's going to hit yourself, other members of Real Celtics Twitter. Look, I'm just saying that the ATO show and those guys, like, I think there's just a lot of great stuff to come. So
I'm really looking forward
to it. That's what I'm hoping for. All right. Well, thank you. Great to having you on. If you don't follow Jack, it's JackMichael_17. Am I correct? _Michael17. So I always throw the underscore in somewhere else. And I type in Jack, and boom, it comes up. I don't do at Jack because that's a different person who is
completely
insane.
I'm working on that one. I'll have that one by the end of the year.
You're working on that one? Yeah. Well, we know he doesn't block people who have, let's say, strange views. So I suspect. Anyway, we won't go there.
Another show.
But anyway, everyone, thanks for listening tonight. This show was brought to you by betonline.ag. You can go to clnsmedia.com/win. Use the promo code CLNS50 for 50% cash back on the first deposit. Go to that website, type in that promo code. That's how we do what we do. If you like listening to what we do here, do that. Also, go to youtube.com/CLNS Media for exclusive audio and video coverage of your Boston Celtics. So for Jack Michael, John Duke, thank you for listening to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a good night.